We were discussing the inevitability of motion, since energy is inherent in consciousness, and energy means motion. And energy, the movement of energy in consciousness is conscious movement. This is inevitable. Motion being inevitable, action being inevitable, it is the goal that supplies motivation, or the motivation that creates the goal. We do not know. And we can vaguely see already that this goal-oriented motion is a troublemaker. We cannot cancel something which has already arisen. We'll come back to that again when we discuss the different types of karma. The famous example given is of an arrow which has left the bow, a bullet that has left the barrel. It cannot be recalled. When we become aware of the facts concerning our life on earth, we already realize we are caught in the spiral. It is a movement away from the center. The movement in the center itself is not a movement. Movement towards the center is a circle. There is no movement in it. If you have seen the wheel of a car spinning very fast, you don't see any movement at all. It's still. Because it is spinning, completing the circle 10,000 times a second. And there is no movement. Movement or motion is noticed only when that movement is away from the center, which is a spiral movement. Only the spiral movement or movement away from the center is seen, observed, felt, experienced. That is the situation in our life, all goal-oriented motion being motion away, movement away from the center. This is where we are caught. And though we are discussing karma yoga, we are getting right back to the kundalini and the spiral. And you might probably see that the spiral doesn't leave us throughout the course. It comes, and I am deliberately introducing this again, the spiral again here, to sort of demythologize this kundalini and make it relevant to our everyday living. It's there everywhere. It's not merely a sort of strange, mysterious power that the yogi sitting in a cave, in the icy cave in the igloo in the Himalayas, awakens. It's there, functioning everywhere in our life, if only we see it. We don't see it, that's a different story. And motion, activity, and motivation and goal. We open our eyes, and immediately we open our eyes, we see that we are caught in this goal orientation. You enter the sports ground, the first thing you see is the goalpost. You enter life, the first thing you are told is you must do so and so, so and so, goal. So it's no use merely blinking and say this, the goal does not exist. It does exist. Even if you hypothetically, right from your little babyhood, you determine, you make up your mind, I am not going to have any goal, I am going to be free, that freedom becomes your goal, moksha. Right? It's built into your cells, it's built into your tendons, and that is why it's called a tendency. The spellings have been, have undergone lots and lots of changes throughout this development of English. It's there. As soon as I wake up, I see it. It's no use discussing, is it good to be hopeful or not hopeful? Is hope good or evil? As soon as I wake up, I see my life is caught in the trap called hope. And unless I have the courage to see the unreal as unreal, I do not deserve the realization of the real. And therefore, we may have to discuss what we may later discard as unreal and worthless. Seeing that life is goal-oriented, wise men all over the world suggested a fourfold motivation. I'm keen on that word fourfold, and they are not four different motivations, it is a single motivation, fourfold motivation. It's four strands bound together. Four strands bound together. And these four motivations are, I think, I may give it to you in Sanskrit, but they are universal. Dharma. I didn't bring the dictionary. For dharma also you will find about a dozen meanings, quite different meanings. But the meaning that we shall adopt here is not so much righteousness as order. It amounts to the same thing. Righteousness is a word used from the pulpits, and order is the word used from the Prime Minister's or the President's palace. The thing is the same. This is one strand of motivation. This should be the goal of your life. The goal of your life should be to generate and sustain order in your life. The second motivation, or the second part of motivation, is artha. It means a lot, yeah? Again, as usual. Normally, it is taken to mean wealth. Material possession, wealth. That's also considered a valid motivation for life. And the third is karma, or the pursuit of pleasure, enjoyment. It's also regarded as another motivation, which is valid. They don't have to say that, do they? Anyhow. They realize that it is something inevitable. So, they said it. We had a headmaster who used to behave like that. If one of the masters was absent, there was a a delightful teacher who used to replace him without being told. And this substitute would have already come into the class and started teaching. And then the headmaster would send for him, knowing that he is in the class. You better take that class. He was already there. But who are you to do it? I have to tell you to do it. I am the headmaster. I am the boss. Yeah. So even though you had already volunteered to do it, of your own accord, still I should. So that way they saw that the pursuit of pleasure was more or less inevitable. They said, okay, that's also sanctioned as one of the goals of life. And eventually moksha. Moksha or liberation. And that liberation is liberation from all the rest of it. If you carefully watch the spiral movement as it runs away from the center, goal-oriented. And since the motion has already commenced away from the center, it seems to go farther and farther away from the center, but the pull from the center is so intense that there is a pull back. Whether you believe it or not, the center is constantly pulling you back to itself. However powerful the temptation to reach out to the goal may be, to these goals may be, the center is pulling you back. And that may be one of the explanations of sleep. I'm only suggesting it. That throughout the rest of the day, your consciousness is spread out, as far out as your intelligence can reach. And there is this tug of war, pulling you, the center pulling you back all the time. You push yourself away, and the center pulls you back. Probably that is why we feel fatigued. Otherwise, there is no need to be fatigued. You and I are breathing, you and I are eating, and a lot of proteins and 14s and 15s and all sorts of things. There should be no need at all to go to bed and sleep like stupid idiots. But we do that. We feel fatigued, tired, worn out. That's because we are willfully driving ourselves, pushing ourselves out, defying this constant pull back towards the center. And at one stage, inevitably, the center wins. And the motion... Yeah. When the motion outward weakens itself by this externalized motion, the center is able to pull you back. And, well, you still don't want it, so you sleep. You still don't want to be conscious, aware of the center, and so you fall asleep. Therefore, there is this constant pull towards the center in all our life, throughout our life. It doesn't disappear. Because we are engaged in all the other activities, it is there. And it makes its presence felt in the pull towards the center. Now, that is how the spiral is not a straightforward circular movement away, but it goes up and down, up and down, up and down. You seem to be climbing out away, but you still come back. Up and down. The pull towards the center and the pull towards the self-assumed, self-appointed goal. So, a downward dip and an upward pull. Well, as Sarah said the other day, in this cosmos, what is down, what is up? So pull towards one thing, pull towards the other. So for, against. For and against, for and against, for and against. Towards and away, towards and away. Our life is torn between these two, towards and away, towards and away. We'll probably discuss this also in this Raja Yoga course. This is one of the main themes of Raja Yoga, that we are tormented by inwardly by raga dvesha, towards, for and against. I like this, I don't like this. And so the spiral builds up. Towards and away, for and against. And that, if you see, you might also realize why, in the case of some people, order in life is more important than earning wealth. In their case, the pull in that arc is stronger than the pull towards wealth. Some people are able to sacrifice a lot of pleasure in order to earn more wealth. In their case, the pull towards wealth is greater than the pull towards pleasure. And therefore there are infinite variations in the strength of each spiral. And it's possible in the case of some, they are prepared, eager and able to abandon everything towards dharma, moksha. I don't want any of these things, I'd rather be free. Moksha is freedom, total freedom from all this, from all this spiral movement, from all this impulse to move away from the center. Right? And once again, you remember the spiral we drew here? Huh? The one, every spiral, if you look at this chart, if you sort of assume this to be the center, and if there is a spiral movement, every one of those spirals touches one's own personality within and at the same time the cosmos. The microcosm and the macrocosm being identical. The counterparts of each other. Whatever is there is here. Whatever is here is there. We are, as it were, tuning stations for the entire universe. And even in the case of this karma spiral, you have exactly the same problem. As the spiral builds up, it is a movement of activity. It's a motion, but it is a motion that involves action. And each action, represented by one spiral, a spiral movement, touches the personality and also the external world or universe, cosmos. This this ark says there must be order in my life, I must be righteous, I must do good. And it goes up there as good action and its reaction. And this here says, I must earn, I must become wealthy. And that goes round as the action meant to acquire that wealth, earn that wealth. It's like this, the horse with the blinkers. I'm not interested in anything else, I'm only interested in earning wealth. Good, bad, indifferent, who, crook, mostly crook. Hey, that's it. It is a sanctioned goal of life, and I'm going to do it. And that is what touches here. I'm going to become wealthy. That goes out as the action motivated by desire to become wealthy. And it spreads out in the cosmos in its own way. If I don't see it, I don't see it. That's a different story. The internal effect, the microcosmic effect of that spiral is called vasana or samskara. Vasana. More or less, they have subtle
this doesn't apply to the Dharma or just the
everything. We'll come to that. Vasana or samskara, they are more or less interchangeable words. Though vasana seems to be psychologically deeper, subtler and deeper. Vasana is the conditioning and the samskara is the habit. If you realize that habit also means a dress. Vasana is the body and samskara is the dress. And therefore vasana is much deeper and more difficult to deal with. The arc touching the microcosm leaves an impression there. Impression, it's quite simple, isn't it? There is a pressure in, there is a pressure inside. There is a pressure inside, in the microcosm. And as it leaves the microcosm with all the energy motivation, it goes out into the external cosmos or macrocosm and there becomes what karma has unfortunately come to mean, destiny. Fate, reaction. And this applies to all the three except the fourth. Fourth is really not, though it's considered one of the four goals or one of the four strands of the one fourfold goal, it's really not a goal as such. And this, vasana and samskara, apply to all the other three. Now, we have to shift a little away from our own preconceived idea of righteousness or order. Is there... an order that is cosmic, which the individual does not create in his own mind. Perhaps that's called ritam in Sanskrit. And that is equal to moksha, freedom. The cosmic world order is beyond the ego sense. It is not subject to conceptualization. It is beyond the human intelligence, and therefore that is not meant here. What is meant by dharma in this particular context is the sort of rules and regulations we set for ourselves. We'll probably deal with that in passing, if we have the time. In all societies, not only in Indian society, they tried to divide, the most important word, don't forget that. They tried to divide society into several castes. Doesn't matter whether you call it castes or guilds, doesn't matter what you call them, or strata of society. You may use different words, but we all mean the same thing. Trade unions, it's exactly the same thing. You have the intellectuals, the administrators, the traders, and the others. The others, all of us. Some are supposed to be born with a brilliant intellectual equipment. Some are born with a little aggressive tendency. They would want to kill, and so you give them a gun and tell them to shoot all your enemies. Don't shoot me, that means that's all. Then comes these traders. I have a personal feeling that they have a completely different color and different texture of brain. You know, these businessmen, millionaires, sort of, multinationals and others, simple people like us. Every society has this kind of classification, and having created this classification, division, someone who is accepted as an authority, or who is powerful enough to make himself accepted as an authority. It's a nice roundabout expression. I am an authority, or the scientist is an authority. Why is it so? Because you have only accepted him as an authority. If you shrug your shoulders, flip your coats like you do when there is snowfall, all these authorities will drop away like the snowflakes. Nothing more important than that. Nothing more difficult than that. But still, we like authority. We like somebody to be in authority. And you put them there and then walk on your knees. Crawl on your knees. That's how the authority is formed. Someone who assumes authority lays down what the duties and responsibilities of these four should be. That is very often regarded as dharma. You were mentioning the other day, I am a Brahmin, so and therefore I must do so and so and so, and I have a privileged position and you must do so and so and so in relation to me. I quickly changed it because often when it comes to this sort of order in society, nobody would notice would quote the order against himself. Right? You must all do your duty and respect a sannyasi or a Brahmin. Do I also pick up the same book and roll a few pages more and see what the duty of a sannyasi is? Then I'll probably run away, jump into the lake. I am a sannyasi, you must fall at my feet and, you know, stand upside down in my presence. That sort of thing. All right? Okay. Shall we refer to the book? What is Swami is supposed to do? No. That's not your business. I am superior. I am born superior. That sort of thing. And therefore, this type of order or dharma is also subject to corruption, subject to perversion, subject to perversion. And when that perversion takes place, it leaves a stamp of perversion within the human mind, and it creates a reaction. And that reaction also is called karma. So this karma has got three aspects now. The action itself with its motivation. And number two, the impression that it leaves on the individual in his own heart, in his own personality, which is the vasana or the samskara. And the reaction that it creates